This is the United Nations in New York. I'm Deanne Penn. In today's program, UN human rights investigators report no sign of improvement in Burundi. And a war surgeon with the Red Cross explains why he feels more at risk of dying while saving lives during conflict. But first, a bulletin of news. A high-level group of international experts has been tasked with addressing challenges related to the rapidly transforming world of work. The members of the Global Commission on the Future of Work were announced on Monday by the International Labour Organization, the ILO, based in Geneva. It will be chaired by the President of Mauritius and the Prime Minister of Sweden. Anna Carmo has the story.
The 28 Commission members represent both workers' groups and employers, reflecting gender balance as well as a balance in geographical regions. They will focus on the relationship between work and society, decent jobs for all, the organization of work and production, and the governance of work. Guy Ryder is the Director General of the International Labour Organization, or ILO.
The Commission which we launched today, and which will work through until the end of next year, will need to tackle these issues, and I'm sure many others as well. And as they do so, they will be touching on many of the key issues of our time, issues which are highlighted day after day in the media, issues which increasingly occupy the political life of our member states, issues which define very frequently the hopes, sometimes the fears, of families across the world.
Anna Carmo, United Nations.
International human rights experts monitoring Burundi have seen no sign of positive change in the country in recent months. That's according to a new report commissioned by the UN Human Rights Council into allegations of ongoing grave abuses in the Great Lakes state. In June, UN investigators highlighted the climate of fear and violence in Burundi linked to President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to stand for a third term in office. We'll have more on that story later in the program. Preventing the spread of disease in Sierra Leone, where mudslides and flooding have killed hundreds of people, is vital, the World Health Organization, WHO, said on Monday. The UN agency is working closely with the government to halt the potential spread of infectious diseases such as malaria and cholera. It's estimated that around 500 people died as a result of flooding and mudslides around the capital, Freetown, last Monday. Scores are still missing. WHO explained that residents in the affected areas are particularly vulnerable to outbreaks of pre-existing infectious diseases such as malaria, typhoid, and cholera, as their water and sanitation facilities have been damaged. People are being urged to take precautions to help prevent any outbreaks, such as washing their hands, only drinking water that has been properly boiled or treated, and using latrines. Cholera response kits, which include tools to test for the disease, are also being distributed in at-risk areas. As we heard in the news, international human rights experts monitoring Burundi have seen no sign of positive evolution in the country since June. That's according to Fatsa Ugeguz, head of the UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi, who has expressed concern over allegations of human rights violations and the restriction of certain freedoms. The commission will present its latest report to the UN Human Rights Council in September. It is based on the testimonies of Burundian refugees in neighboring countries and in Europe, as well as of people who remain in the East African country, which has been in turmoil since April 2015, following the president's decision to run for a third term. Mr. Ugeguz spoke to Alpha Diallo.
Since the last June, where the Commission made its oral declaration at the Human Rights Council, we received no sign of positive evolution of the situation in Burundi, in particular as far as the restriction to freedom. Certain freedoms are concerned. We expressed some concerns concerning lots of allegations of violation of human rights, but also concerning the restriction of the political field and the exercise of freedom of expression, for example, of association. But we haven't received any signs of positive evolution. On the contrary, we have received some testimonies since June showing that there's a kind of the tendency that we have underlined in June is persisting. The signals that we have received through those testimonies are for us clear evidence that the situation is not improving since June.
But how can the experts of the Commission manage to work well in the absence of cooperation with Burundian authorities?
The Commission, actually, we don't have cooperation, as you just underlined. We could have worked better if we had access to the territory of Burundi, but we have managed to collect very large amount of testimonies, more than 470 testimonies, and collected not only in the neighboring countries of Burundi, but in other countries, but as well as in Burundi through our various sources. So we managed to conduct our activities in a rather effective way.
When you talk about reliable information, how can you collect them in the absence of access in Burundi? Is this an investigation only based on testimony of refugees?
Not only on refugees. As I mentioned, there are also people within the territory who are still in Burundi that we were able to hear through we have various means of communication, but the bulk of the witnesses are outside Burundi, of course, in the neighboring countries, but also in Europe.
Why it is important to consider all human rights violations in Burundi and how this work of the Commission can be useful in the fight against impunity?
But this is very important for a Commission to collect information. First, on the basis of our conclusions and recommendations, it will allow the government to take positive action. But of course, the action cannot be positive in the absence of an independent and impartial judicial system. So it's up to the government of Burundi to take action and to strengthen its judicial system.
A leading war surgeon has spoken of the increasing risks associated with saving lives in combat zones and the need for governments to muster the courage to protect humanitarians. Dr. Marco Baldan, who's worked for the International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, in numerous conflicts, including most recently Yemen, was speaking at the UN in Geneva to mark World Humanitarian Day. The day is commemorated each year on the 19th of August, and this year's theme was Healthcare is hashtag not a target. Standing in front of a bullet-riddled Red Cross ambulance parked outside the UN, Dr. Baldan told Daniel Johnson that it was an increasingly common sight on the front line.
It's nothing new to me, this, and on the contrary, I tend to see it more and more frequently in the last years. When I started 20 years ago, I felt I was at risk of facing a stray bullet or stepping on a landmine, but not to be directly targeted by the fighters in a conflict. Today, I feel more and more at risk of that. The figures we get from official data from ICRC show that every 2 days we have a health structure targeted around the world in conflict zones. Why I do this? These people, these victims that we see in these countries affected by war, they have nobody to help them. Their health system is one of the first victims of the conflict. If you're not there to help them, they're desperate. They have nobody to ask for help.
How does the international community need to react to this new code of warfare?
Well, I have the feeling there is a trend of pessimism, of accepting things as they are, the ineluctability of the reality of war. But it should not be like this. If we don't stand up ourselves, we as physicians, surgeons, politicians, diplomats, human beings, it will not change, or it will change for the worse.
This is the message that you have to give today. This is what you want to tell governments. You really want to see a change in the way governments act and perhaps end conflict?
Absolutely. I think we, as humanitarian, as health professionals, as diplomats, we should master the courage to stand up and say it has not to be like this. Political discussion to find solutions. I'm not an expert on that. I'm an expert on fixing human bodies damaged by bombs, bullets or mines. But we have to find a way to stop it.
In your 20 plus years of experience as a war surgeon, a senior war surgeon, what's the memory that really has affected you the most?
The strength and the persistence of the local colleagues wherever I go, be it Yemen, be it Syria, be it Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia. You know, whenever the problems are above our capacity to manage, we are pulled out. But the local colleagues, they stay there. The ambulance drivers, the doctors, the nurses, they have no way out. So my thoughts go to them, and I'm really impressed by their dedication. If I consider Yemen, the physician I've been talking to in the last few months when I was there, they have not been paid for the previous 8 months, and they keep going to the hospital to do their work, to keep treating patients.
You've been listening to today's News and Features program from the United Nations in New York. I'm Deanne Penn. Thanks for listening.